This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in, everybody. Another edition of Sharp Money here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. Ready to go from the South Point in Las Vegas. I'm Ben Wilson in for Patrick today. Amal Shaw with me in studio. So is Dustin Sweetelson behind the glass. Dustin sweating day baseball. We're sweating tennis, Amal. No better setup for our brains to be at than this, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely right. By the way, it's a good thing there's always day baseball. Dustin's always going to be involved in something. But the Cubs have managed in this series to jump out against your Brewers early in every game. Yesterday, they come from behind and get the win. We'll see if they can continue that trend and hold on here today, though.
We shall see. I asked Dustin earlier if the Cubs was the only action you had, and your response was what?
Is that the only game being played today?
I know. Initiation. I realized I was a little slow on the draw with not realizing Dustin played up.
I'm trying to get Dustin to the point where he understands that, look, take your best play, and you run your best play on fourth and sixth instead of trying to run, you know, Trace McSorley against Chase Young 1v1 or something like that if you're James Franklin. Don't do that. Just take your best play and make it work.
That's a great life lesson there,
Dustin. Instead of loving any plays, I run a lot of plays I like on first, second, third, and fourth down.
I feel like you're the guy playing Madden. You just run engage eight every single time when you're on defense.
It works if Danny Werfel, Ike Hilliard, and Reed Anthony are your offense. When Spurrier would run the same play until anybody could stop it, that's fine when you're just better than everybody else.
That is fine. Unfortunately for Dustin, that look tells it all.
Engage eight is literally my betting strategy. I bet eight and I engage on all of them.
I love that we could get an engage eight reference about 90 seconds.
I don't even know what that is, but it works.
I've given them all a hard time before for not trusting my Madden. You know, since I played so much Madden as a kid, I could have great in-game coaching ability if I were to be in that position in the NFL. That's all I'm saying. We have a great guest list, by the way, today, and we will talk a lot of NFL with Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk, NBC Sports NFL Insider. We'll get to Mike at about 4:30 on the East Coast. But first, Josh Applebaum, he has some MLB plays today. Our VSiN betting analyst will stop by. Vinny Magliulo, Gone Gaming Sports Director, right here at the South Point with Chris Andrews and Jimmy Vaccaro, stops by 5 o'clock Eastern. We'll talk some Major League Baseball as we approach the All-Star break. Ned Coletti, former general manager in the big leagues at 5:15 Eastern. And then Evan Sidery talking some NBA with us at 5:30 as well. We'll have some more NBA thoughts to get to. But to kick off the show here, Amal, we have some more developments coming in the NFL. We're getting closer and closer to breaking training camp. We still don't have a team for Hard Knocks, by the way. They've never gone later than July 2nd, at least in the last decade announcing it. Now, I don't know how many people really care about that, but people are starting to think, well, could it be the Jets? Shouldn't it be the Jets with everything going on this year?
Oh, it seems like the most interesting choice, but we'll see what happens. I don't have HBO anymore. I got rid of it last year, so I couldn't care less.
Wow. Amal, no longer. You still have you have Showtime, right? Because you're on Showtime.
I do. Well, I'm not at home when it's on. So, you know,
I guess you can't watch yourself.
Yeah, exactly. That's plus that's pay-per-view. So that's a little bit different, but, these cable companies, I mean, listen, if you're going to rob me, at least have the courtesy to use a gun. It's like buying a slice of pizza at an airport.
Yeah, I'm boycotting HBO also until they bring Cat House back.
I don't even know what that is, but okay.
What do you think it is?
I have some semblance of an idea, but I mean, you know, I have a pretty good idea.
Okay, well, to transition from that, from the Cat House to the Doghouse, I suppose, because one running back who was in the doghouse of his team last year, now no longer on that team, Dalvin Cook of Minnesota. See this report coming out today, ESPN's Jeremy Fowler reporting that the Jets, they are doing their due diligence. That was the quote. Looking in, they're in the mix, another quote, on running back Dalvin Cook. Dalvin Cook, if you look at the advanced numbers last year, he's had a fine career, but he was the worst running back in the league by rush yards over expectation last year in Minnesota. And if you watched him, he clearly looked them all like he had lost a step. So I don't really understand what the point would be here from the Jets side in adding him, as much as it is a nice veteran presence to have when you have good talent at that position.
Boy, I tell you what, man, I dropped my phone the other day with Dustin and I already broke a piece of it. I'm willing to throw this phone at you if you'd sit there and tell me you don't want Dalvin Cook. Are you kidding me? Behind Breece Hall, I'm taking him every day of the week. I don't care these expectations, these analytics nonsense. He has to deal with that stiff Kirk Cousins at quarterback. Give me him with Breece Hall, Garrett Wilson on the perimeter, Aaron Rodgers under center, I'll take my chances.
So it's Kirk Cousins' fault
that Kirk Cousins sucks.
He tripped over his line like half of his carries last year.
Well, let's see what happens this year. Look, I'm telling you, you and Maher want to get rid of all these running backs. To have two good running backs as a value add. Look, even the 49ers have probably the best combination in the NFL right now, right? With Christian McCaffrey and Deebo Samuel. Deebo's probably the best all-around offensive player in the National Football League. But to me, if you can add a piece like Dalvin Cook, he doesn't have a ton of catches. I think last year, low 30s in terms of catches. But I just think the threat of him, He is a threat to hit a home run, make plays. I like him a lot. I would love to see him backing up Breece Hall, who got injured last year for the Jets. I think this team is far more dangerous than people are giving them credit for. The defense was very good. They were elite. The problem was Zach Wilson was going three and out every play. I just think you're mad because Rodgers left your team.
No, I'm not. That's not it. I mean, his numbers were pretty pedestrian. But here's the thing. Rodgers last year, playing behind a elite offensive line with a below-average wide receiver room. Where does Aaron Rodgers go to this year? A below-average wide receiver room with a below-average offensive line. And we now all of a sudden believe he's almost 40 years old, and this is just going to turn because he got out of Green Bay, and they should be considered a contender. I would not bet the Jets with your money, Amal, as a division or AFC title team. I just wouldn't. How can you trust that?
Don't worry. When Jordan Love's 9-for-20 with two picks, I'm going to text you on Sunday.
I can't wait.
But here's the bottom line, guys. I don't care if you guys disagree with me, but I think Sweetelson's with me on this one. I think this Jets team, when you look at the AFC, I'm not sure where the New England Patriots are. To me, Buffalo is a very good team. They're the third best choice in the AFC. I got no qualms with anybody making the argument if they have them higher or maybe as low as four, but I don't think you can drop Buffalo any lower than that. The Jets defense, Sauce Gardner is arguably the top cornerback in the National Football League. I still love C.J. Mosley. Quinnen Williams is one of the elite defensive linemen in the NFL. This is a very good team. And then you factor in Rodgers. Here's the point. I think it was Dustin and I were talking about this. It's not Rodgers passing all that. It's just the accuracy. To me, a guy like Garrett Wilson, you put him in a position to make run after the catch plays. You do that with the rest of his team. I think they could be very dangerous. I don't know. Maybe I'm being a homer because I think Rodgers is one of the greatest quarterbacks I've ever seen, and I'm biased. But I think this team is better than they're getting credit for. And Miami's got some offensive talent. But here's the concern you have if you're a Dolphins backer, better, what have you. Can Tua stay healthy? Because once you start to get a number of concussions, and let's hope it doesn't occur, but there's always that concern that it could repeat itself.
Yeah, and this is not just, you know, this is not a Buffalo, New England, Miami thing. I just look at the team itself, and we have watched Rodgers struggle, as I agree with you, Amal, one of the greatest I've watched at the position, but when we've seen the combination of poor O-line with poor wide receiver group, Rodgers is talented enough to get away with one of those things being subpar. When both are bad, he doesn't have time to throw the ball, he doesn't have windows of separation whatsoever, and you see things crater and go downhill. And you can already see some signs of that for the Jets, where he brings in some of his old friends and Alan Lazard or Randall Cobb to say, all right, at least I have some of my guys here who I can trust. Because right now with what they're throwing out at offensive line, where you're going with a 37-year-old Dwayne Brown at left tackle, Mekhi Becton at right tackle, didn't even play all of last year, that's where I still have concerns on the O-line, and that has to get shored up for me to feel more confident about that offense.
Okay, a few things. You brought up some really good points. First of all, I agree with you on Randall Cobb. I feel like he's a guy who's on the roster because he's close friends with Aaron Rodgers.
Pretty much.
I don't think he's that good anymore. I've never been a big Alan Lazard guy. I don't know how you feel about him. I know you've watched more Packer games than I have, but I'm not necessarily high on him. You mentioned Dwayne Brown. Look, these guys don't have to be great. Aaron Rodgers, to me, him and Brady are probably the two best, in my opinion. I'm not talking about scrambling. I'm talking about just the ability to sidestep the rush in the pocket. I think they're the two best I've ever seen at that. You mentioned Mekhi Becton. It's more of injuries that have been a concern with me with him. Mm-hmm. I think he's still a good player. You bring over Elijah Vera Tucker from Tampa. I think he's still a solid player there. You're going to have him on the left or right guard position. They'll be okay. That's the one question mark when you look at this team is the offensive line. That's the area you have to be concerned about. But overall, look, if these guys can't show out, you're talking about Wilson, Lazard, Mecole Hardman. I think Hardman, I didn't think he's as good as everybody else thought he was in Kansas City. I think he's a solid player. Dustin, I don't know if you watched him when he was at Georgia. I thought he was an average receiver at best. Now, he didn't have great quarterback play there. He played with Mahomes. He wasn't going to be Tyreek Hill, and I think that was the problem. Because he has speed, everyone expected him to be Tyreek Hill. I think Tyreek Hill had a combination or does have a combination of speed and quickness, which I don't think Hardman necessarily has that level of quickness.
I mean, he's a fast receiver, but he's kind of redundant when you have Corey Davis on your roster and you drafted Denzel Mims. Like, they have a lot of just dudes at receiver. Don't want to call them dudes.
Yeah.
Human beings at receiver. They have one dude in Garrett Wilson. Just a bunch of, like, random mishmash of guys. Like, I don't understand adding and fortifying your receiving core when you add someone like Aaron Rodgers, who in his past has been a kingmaker at receiver. Think about what some of these guys did after they left him in Green Bay. Like, we never heard from Jordy Nelson or James Jones or Randall Cobb until he, you know, came back.
Who's the guy on NFL Network that thought he was better than he was the Packer?
Probably James Jones.
No, there's another one. I forgot. It could be
Greg Jennings.
Yes, thank you.
Right, he's on Minnesota. Fox now as well. Yes, then he went to Minnesota. And
that's what I'm saying.
He joined witness protection.
I don't understand the need to bring in all these receivers when there were a couple other issues to address. As far as the Dalvin Cook thing goes, I'm not big on running backs. However, if you're a team that you believe is Super Bowl caliber, I believe in having a good running back at that point to put you over the top.
I'll just say this. You have to have the ability to run the football. It's very rare. You know, we talk about Peyton Manning and what they were with those receivers. They had Edgerton James, right?
They had Dominic Rhodes Adai.
Well, when they won the Super Bowl, yes. But my point was when they were really good and then Tony Dungy find ways to lose in the playoffs every year,
They
had an elite running back who's a Hall of Famer. All I'm saying is you need a running game. And in today's NFL, you need the combination of two running backs. We see it in Cleveland. We see it in San Francisco. When you look at the elite groupings, there's always a couple of guys there. And I think that's what they need. I'm just telling you guys are undervaluing. Why is it that Brady doesn't have a fall off in anybody's mind when he's 40-something, but a guy who's the most accurate passer I've ever seen, everyone's like, oh, he's not as good.
Well, he has started to fall off, though. I mean, look at the numbers.
What were his stats last year?
I'll look him up right
21st
now.
21st in EPA per play. Was top five EPA. In the league the previous 5 years.
Let me tell you something. All these Tampa analytics people are not winning World Series, okay? Everybody, listen.
They're winning Super Bowls, though, and that's what we're discussing.
That's because the Kansas City Chiefs had a horrible offensive line in that game.
I mean, it was true. That is what happened. You're also forgetting Donald Brown from those Colts running back, just because of the great. Damn it, Donald! One of the great nat sound audio moments of all time in NFL in game play. All we know is this Jets season is going to be fascinating. Look, 9.5 is a win total. It's juiced over. I'm not betting it. Really, the outcomes though are very wide. It would not surprise me either way if that is an over or an under team. Stay away from me. I'm all Dustin, big fans of the Jets in 2023. We'll talk some NBA, some trade potential. We'll talk about next on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Our second hour of Sharp Money rolls on from Las Vegas. Such a fun time of year. We're starting all of our NFL breakdowns on the show with Amal Shaw. I'm Ben Wilson, Dustin Sweetelson behind the glass. And right now we welcome him in from Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports NFL Insider. He is Mike Florio. Also, his new book is out, by the way, Father of Mine, which has been out for a couple of months. I certainly go ahead and check that out. Mike, we appreciate the time. And you know, the big story, at least from our vantage point in the betting world, has been some of these suspensions that have been handed down over the last couple of weeks. And I wanted to get your take just on how the NFL is letting players know about the new rules that have come out, where Nicholas Petit-Frere, the O lineman in Tennessee, claimed he was never even made aware of the rules he was breaking. So from your sources, from the people you've talked to, how is the NFL going about that? And what is the actual education like behind closed doors there on the gambling front?
Well, you know, there's a fundamental difference when an employer has a policy. If it wants simply to get the employee to sign an acknowledgement form that they've received the policy and they understand it, and then there's the employer who wants the employee to truly understand it. And I think the NFL's approach before this season, this offseason, was more about being able to say, hey, don't blame us. We distributed the policy, and we have a perfunctory training program that may or may not fully explain to the players what they can and can't do. And what we've seen is 10 players who have been suspended over the past 18 months or so, and a sense that the policy isn't as clear as it needs to be. And the policy reads like it was written by lawyers for lawyers. It's not something that is easily understandable. And I know of at least one team, maybe more, that they've taken the 8-page policy and rewritten it in English so that players understand it and that everyone understands the rules that apply to non-players, the rules that apply to players, what you can do, what you can't do. Examples need to be in there. The NFL's rule book, for example, has specific scenarios that will help people understand how a rule applies. And they just never did that. This year, I feel like they're trying to do it. So now we've gotten through phase one. No one can say they're not aware of a policy on gambling. And no one can say they don't at least have access to someone who could explain to them what the policy means and where the lines are as to what you can and can't do. There are other issues that I think the league needs to be concerned about, but I think at least for now, there's enough there that no one is going to shed any real tears for players who step on the wrong side of the line, because you know there's a line there. You may not know exactly where it is, but you know there's a line there, and you're on notice that you better figure out where it is and how it works.
Mike, you mentioned something. I was going to ask you something completely different, but you said there's some other areas the league should be concerned. And what are some of those areas?
Well, there are, for example, concerns regarding the handling of inside information. How would the NFL ever properly enforce, investigate, determine whether or not inside information is being misused? How is that information even being managed when you're talking about knowledge of the game plan, not just the players and the coaches, but administrative assistants, people who have access to the online and other digital properties, the playbooks, et cetera? Is there a scripting of 15 plays to start the game? Who sees that when it's written on a whiteboard somewhere? Does the person who comes in and empties the trash can have access to that? So getting your arms around inside information and making sure it's not misused is a big problem. Agents, what they can and can't do is kind of an open question as it relates to the league because they don't have jurisdiction over the agents. And the most important thing to me, and this is the easiest fix for a player who's determined to gamble, you just have someone else do it. Yep. You give someone else your money and they go do it on their phone, friend, associate, family member, whatever. And if you're discreet about it, the NFL is never going to know you did it. So there's a lot of different ways and a lot of different problems and a lot of different issues that the NFL should be concerned about. I'm not sure that they are. And it gives the NFL a certain amount of cover if they can just create this impression, hey, look at these suspensions. The gambling policy must work. We're catching people who are violating it. Well, you've got people who are going to be smart enough to violate it in ways that you're never going to catch them. And we just sit back and hope there isn't some big controversy someday where it all explodes.
Yeah, I think you make some great points, especially the one about giving information to a friend and somebody else could potentially do that. But because of the amount of money that players are making today, I always thought once this got legalized, it would be a preventative measure in terms of players potentially putting themselves at risk. I always say Calvin Ridley made the worst bet in the history of sports. He bet $1,000 to lose, what, $10, $11 million? I forgot how much his salary was that year. So has that somewhat been something that's resonated with the players, or is this still a fear? Because I've seen a lot of players gamble in the casinos playing blackjack or playing high-stakes baccarat simply because they're so competitive. I don't know necessarily if it's a gambling problem, but it's something just competitive in their nature and their DNA.
I think that a young man full of testosterone, competitive drive, addicted to that dopamine rush that comes from winning and losing, plenty of disposable income, the ingredients are there for a gambling addiction to develop. And it could be that a lot of these guys come to the NFL with a gambling addiction. And sure, what is the NFL doing to spot those guys and intervene? Surely it can't just be punitive and thou shalt not, with no understanding or appreciation given to the possibility that this person may have a problem. And, you know, the other side of this, too, because it would be so much easier if the rule for players was you just can't bet on any sports, period, like it is for all non-players. For all non-players, you can't bet on any sports ever, anywhere, anytime. For players, there's this, well, you can, but when you're not at work. And if you're traveling on business, you can't do it. If you're in your hotel room on the road, you can't do it. And Jameson Williams reportedly found that out the hard way. Why do they let players bet at all? It's not collectively bargained. They don't have to give players the right to bet on anything. Why are they doing it? And my on-air partner, Chris Sims, has a conspiracy theory that actually may have some merit. He thinks the sports book want the players to be allowed to bet on other sports because they're young, they're full of testosterone, they're rich, they're still naive enough to think they can win, and they're going to piss away a lot of their money. That's why they're allowed to bet. At least that's his theory, because the sports books want their cash.
Interesting. Chris Sims, conspiracy theorist. I didn't realize.
It's not a conspiracy. I agree with Chris. Yeah. I think, Mike, that's a valid point. Right?
No doubt.
Where are you going to find a clientele that's 21 and above that it makes a seven-figure income and has one other thing that causes problems on your hand? Enough time to be able to do this.
Yeah. No question. Totally makes sense.
They got downtime in the offseason, and it's basketball season after the NFL season ends, and NBA playoffs going on, and there's action. There's action. I need action, and I got all this money, and I can either go buy another Ferrari or I can just, you know, have something that gets my attention, that gets my juices flowing, and it gives me a reason to watch this game, and I'm more excited when I watch this game. It almost feels like I'm playing in the game because I have skin in it. Mm-hmm.
I saw the image of an NFL player like doing what Amal does at 2 a.m. and watching Bad Homburg, you know, betting on the WTA late at night. Mike Florio again for Pro Football Talk joining us right now on VSiN Sharp Money. Still, we're in a position, Mike, where about a month away from training camps getting underway in full force with preseason now, about 4 or 5 weeks away. But a number of free agents still out there to be had. There have been a number of reports around where could former Minnesota Viking running back Dalvin Cook end up? What is the latest from what you've been hearing as far as some of those teams on the East Coast that have at least thrown themselves in the mix, but as of now, we really don't know for sure where Cook is actually going to end up here for 2023.
Well, you know, initially it looked like he was going to go to the highest bidder, but no one emerged in the same ballpark as what he was going to make from the Vikings, $10.4 million this year. So then he started talking about going somewhere where he could win a Super Bowl. He was asked what he meant by that. He mentioned the Jets and the Dolphins, and now the Patriots are creeping into this. And this is fascinating to me because if you get him, you're keeping two of your division rivals from getting him. And if the Patriots are serious about trying to not be left in the dust by the Bills, the Dolphins, and the Jets, why not get Cook if he's otherwise going to go to the Jets or the Dolphins? And you know, the Dolphins have been an obvious destination for Cook for a while now. He's from Miami. The Jets, at some point several weeks before he was released, I started to hear that he was a possibility there because of Breece Hall's ACL recovery, and they're not 100% sure he's going to be good to go, and they're all in with Aaron Rodgers, so they need a weapon in the backfield. So the Patriots, who, look, Bill Belichick, I mean, he's sniffing around DeAndre Hopkins kind of openly. I think he's being more discreet if he's interested in Dalvin Cook because he doesn't want one of these other teams to close the deal, and maybe he does decide he needs this. And the thing about the AFC East, when you look at their schedule this year, the teams they play out of the division, they play every team from the AFC West. They play every team from the NFC East. That's half your schedule. And then you have the round robin home and home against each other. You got a lot of tough games on your schedule this year, and it may be that only the team that wins that division gets to the playoffs because the other divisions have more favorable out-of-division schedules, easier chance to fatten up a record, easier divisional games because it's not this meat grinder of Bills, Dolphins, Jets, Patriots. It may be that only one gets into the postseason, so it puts more pressure on all of them to try to be the team that gets there.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see how that will play out. As Mike Florio, again, from Pro Football Talk, NBC Sports NFL Insider, joining us here on VSiN Sharp Money. Give him a follow at Pro Football Talk and check out his new book, recently released, Father of Mine, available where you can get your books wherever. Mike, thank you for the time. We really appreciate all the insights.
Thanks, guys. Good talking to you.
Thank you. Absolutely. By the way, Amal, looks like Tsitsipas and Murray headed for another tiebreak in the second set. Tsitsipas won the first one. They're on serve. Tsitsipas serving down 6-5 has a game point to send that to a second set breaker. I liked my number earlier, that over-under. I guess I'll amend it to 11:30 p.m. British Standard
that's
Time.
That's going over that for sure.
Looks like we're going over that for sure. Maybe midnight will actually happen. We have some more thoughts coming up next. Three up, three down here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Final hour of Sharp Money here on VSiN. A big thanks to Vinny Maliulo from joining us in studio at the South Point. We're tracking some tennis, some baseball. Brewers just beat the Cubs. I'm also a solo homer from Victor Caratini. Bottom of the eighth ended up being the go-ahead shot. 6-5 Brew Crew, and that was much needed after the bullpen tried to blow it again, but they get the win there. And they're underway in the south side of Chicago. Blue Jays and White Sox just getting started. Lance Lynn on the bump. Nothing there in the top of the first. And we have a lot of baseball to talk about right now because Ned Colletti spent 2 decades in the game, first as a director of baseball operations for the Giants, and then most recently a whole decade as the LA Dodgers GM. Joins us right now. It's a great time to talk to you, Ned. We appreciate the time with us coming up on the All-Star break. We have the trade deadline coming up soon. I want to get your take on a pitcher you know very, very well because he's second right now on the NL Cy Young odds board, and that's Clayton Kershaw. Everybody wants to ask, okay, where's the longevity? Can he make it a full season? What's your take on the year we're seeing from Kershaw? It seems like he looks like he's in 2013 instead of 2023 when you watch him pitch every 5 days.
Well, he's obviously a Hall of Fame candidate and somebody who probably should be first ballot. He's got a little bit of a shoulder issue right now, and he's got a lot of innings on him. But he's somebody that competes all the time. And I think that you know this may be a chance with the break to give him a couple weeks off a little bit. But, you know, I think as long as he pitches, he's going to be a candidate to win the top award. Just who he is. You look at his numbers. Mm-hmm. You look at his productivity. You know about his compete. So he's one of those guys that always gives you a chance to win. As a GM, as a manager, you're always looking for that chance to win.
Ned, I'm going to put you on the spot. Being a former general manager, just down the road on I-5 there in Anaheim, the Angels have a big decision to make right now with Shohei Ohtani. As a free agent, it looks like he might wind up with the Dodgers, potentially the Mets or wherever else. If you are the Angels and you have an opportunity to get a good haul for him in terms of draft picks and young players in the minor leagues, would you make that move at this point in time if you're the Angels?
Well, before Mike Trout had his surgery a couple days ago or today, I guess, probably not.
Sure.
But now you've got – I'd have to look at it differently now. What are our legitimate chances of winning a division or qualifying for the playoffs? And they know that far better than I do. But I think before, a week ago, I'd probably tell you, as long as we're in the race at the end of July, I'd hold on. But now I'd have to think about it a little bit deeper. If we do fall out of it with the absence of another great player in Trout, of making that move, if you could get yourself two or three really high-end players, not guys that are perhaps, maybe, who knows, but I mean true high-end prospects, you'd have to think about it. It may actually, and this is a little bit of a circuitous answer, but it may actually help Anaheim's chances of re-signing him if he were to be traded and they were able to really shore up their farm system and add two or three bona fide players to it. Because if you listen to what, and nobody knows like Mr. Ohtani or his agency from CAA what he's thinking, but you know what you read is he wants to go someplace to win and compete for a long time. You know, a lot of the qualities you mentioned, the Dodgers, a lot of qualities that L.A. has, north of Anaheim there. But, who knows how he would react to being traded. But there's a chance that Anaheim could improve itself and be in a better position to re-sign him because their organization might be deeper, depending on who they could obtain for him.
It's a really interesting way to look at it, too, from the Ohtani perspective. Is Ned Coletti joins us, former Dodgers GM. Check out his book, by the way, if you haven't already. Really good read, The Big Chair, published a few years ago. Available where all books are out there right now. And you think about it from the other side, too, Ned. If we think about if you're a GM of a contender and you know that you want to put a package together for Ohtani, how much has it changed simply because of the fact that he is a player unlike any we have seen before in baseball, a dynamic two-way player who can pitch, who can hit at an elite MVP level? How much leeway would that give you as a GM as far as how big of a package you could actually put together because of the argument you could make about how amazing of a talent you're getting in return?
Well, there's no doubt that you'd be acquiring one of the greatest players ever traded at the deadline. I was fortunate to acquire Manny Ramirez years ago, who for the last 2 months of the season and postseason had maybe the greatest run of any acquired player. I think he had 19 homers, 50 RBIs, whatever, hit almost 400. But you also have to know that, okay, you're going to make this two or three high-end prospect deal to acquire this player for the stretch run with no guarantee you're going to sign the player when it's over. So those are always tough to do if you're the GM because you're really mortgaging the future for this player probably in a large way in order to win this year. So I think you'd have to have the type of team that you thought you've got a legitimate chance to win it all, not just get into it and not just maybe survive one round, but really the legit chance to win the World Series, because it'll be a while, most likely, unless you're going to be able to re-sign him before you're going to be able to do that again if you're trading two or three high-end prospects to do it. Anaheim also, if they're going to trade this player as much as he means to their franchise, they're going to have to be sure that they're not just getting extra men or people who are going to play once in a while. They need real players coming back.
I love the point you made there. Ned, I want to ask you something from a personal standpoint. if you're in a front office chair, the general manager, not just the GM of the team, but you're looking at your longevity, because one of my knocks on the front office in baseball is they don't sign GMs to long enough contracts. I think you're better off signing a GM to a seven-year deal because it's a lot less expensive than paying some guy, overpaying for a 7 to 10 year deal, and then it kind of strangleholds the team going forward. I feel like some decisions are made just a hasty decision to win immediately, like you alluded to. You know, if you sign the guy, can you legitimately win a World Series, or if you trade for him? So as a GM, when you're looking to make this move, is there sometimes a thought process for a general manager who might be on the hot seat? Let's make this move. It might hurt the team long term down the line, but in the short run, it may give me job security and an opportunity to get to an LCS or a World Series.
Well, I mean, it's a possibility. That's the thought process. I can tell you it was never my thought process. My number one responsibility is to the organization. And to do what is best for the organization. Even in my last couple of years, we had chances to do deals that would have helped us for 2 or 3 months, but wouldn't help us for the long haul. And I refuse to do deals like that. You know, we had a young Corey Seager, a young Cody Bellinger. We had a lot of great young talent. A young Jock Peterson. A lot of great young talent that was sitting in the minor leagues, but you know we weren't gonna change the future of a club for a short term gain. I don't think I don't think that's the right way to do it.
Yep.
Do we make big deals anyway? Yes, but for players that were not of the ilk of a Corey Seager, for example.
Mm-hmm. Ned Coletti, former MLB general manager, joining us right now on Sharp Money. Follow him at Real Ned Coletti. Before we let you go, Ned, you think about a team we have had a lot of discussions on this network recently, the New York Mets, where you've already invested so much and you still are on the outside looking in. How would you approach things heading up into the deadline if you're the front office for the Mets right now?
That's a tough question. again, you got to be... I think one of the most important things in professional sport is, and probably in almost any business, is to really evaluate your team, your staff, whatever, truly. Not make it more than it is or less than it is, but to be as accurate as you possibly can when you make your decisions going forward. You can talk yourself into anything, but you got to be wise with your choices, and you got to be wise with where is your team at. You know, money is great to have financially for teams. It allows teams to make mistakes and go and acquire somebody else to fill that role. But regardless of how much you have to spend, you have to make the right choices, and you have to be as realistic, I guess, is probably the best word,
mm-hmm.
one of the best words, to figure out where you're at and what you're able to do. Because you can keep adding, but if you don't have the core to do it, and if you're too far out to do it, you know, are you really going to go heavy for 2 months, 3 months, and and finish 5 games out, not 10 games out? You know, that's not going to do you any good.
No doubt.
So you got to be realistic with where you're at.
And you're 5-1 right now, underdog, the Mets, to make the playoffs. Ned, thank you so much for the time. Can't thank you enough for all the insights. We appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you.
Again, Ned Coletti joining us here on Sharp Money. We'll transition. Little NBA coming up next. Evan Sidery, Forbes NBA Insider, will join us right after this here on VSiN.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Download the DraftKings app today, and new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Use promo code VSIN when you sign up. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full terms and conditions. By the way, we haven't updated this in a while, Amal, but Andy Murray up a break now in the third set. They're tied one set all against Stefanos Tsitsipas. 27 unforced errors for the Greek, Stefanos Tsitsipas. So
hopefully Murray can hold on here.
Hopefully. Let's go. Let's go. It's been a fun match so far, though. Murray up 5-3 right now. I like where we're at, though, with this. Murray looking very good at the moment. We have some more NBA talk to get to, though, right now. We'll circle back, talk some tennis in the last break, as well as some of our plays for the rest of the night tonight. But we want to get all the deets on what's going on in NBA free agency, some of these trade rumors going on. Evan Sidery, Forbes NBA insider, joins us right now. Give him a follow at esidery on Twitter. And everybody wants to know, first and foremost, Evan, about what's going on with Portland and how this Damian Lillard trade request situation is going to play out. What's the latest you're hearing on how the GMs on the Portland side and Miami and Dame's camp, how is everybody right now reacting and feeling after a few days to settle in after this request was made?
Yeah, it's kind of feeling like each side's camp is digging in pretty hard to the point where it might get a little ugly behind the scenes between Lillard and his camp and the Blazers. They try to find the right deal for Damian Lillard. And from the Blazers' side of things, they don't want to give Damian Lillard for peanuts or pennies on the dollar. And that's what the Heat are offering. They're not giving up much of their young guys. They're not going to give up much of their picks. They're going to have to reroute Tyler Hero to a third team to help facilitate that deal. But Portland does not want to help Miami out here. They want peak value. When you see superstar trades that we've seen recently, like Kevin Durant getting 4 first-round picks, Rudy Gobert getting 4 first-round picks, and a lot of young players, even going back to the Anthony Davis trade, you get Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball and Josh Hart and multiple picks in that trade as well. Without the Heat set up right now, they can offer Portland just 2 picks 60-plus years down the road, a pick swap, and a couple of intriguing young guys like Nikola Jovic or Jaime Jaquez they just drafted in the first round this year. But that's definitely way off the scale of what really usual superstar trades are. So Portland's digging in here. They want to find a team that can help them get more draft capital and more assets in the process. And Lillard and his camp are adamant about ending up with the Miami Heat. He only wants to play for the Miami Heat. So this could drag out a little longer. I would not be surprised at all if this goes into August now, just based off of it seems like Damian Lillard's hell-bent on going to the Miami Heat. And I think Portland is really digging in themselves and not wanting to give up for cheap value either.
Evan, I can't disagree with Portland's perspective, but when you look at it, generally big trades are made before the draft in these scenarios. I mean, to me, if you're Portland, you've got to maximize what you can get. You mentioned the Rudy Gobert trade. Is there a realistic scenario where they get at least some fair market value on this? And if he doesn't wind up in Miami, what happens with Damian Lillard either in Portland or what's a secondary place you think he could land?
Yeah, so that's a really good one because when you think about the situation, definitely Miami can't offer what Portland's looking for. Portland's looking for young players, draft capital, salary cap relief, all in the one there. And there are multiple teams that can easily beat out Miami's offer pretty quickly. And one team I mentioned before that I think makes a lot of sense as far as an underdog here, but it's like there's really not much smoke around them, would be the Brooklyn Nets. They have all the draft capital from the Kevin Durant trade, the Kyrie Irving trade. They have some young pieces as well they can throw into the mix for salary cap purposes. I think they make a lot of sense for a underdog sleeper team. And also, I would say the Utah Jazz as well, just because they have all the ammunition from those draft trades they've made in the past with Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. But it sounds like from Damian Lillard and his camp, he is adamant on Miami and only Miami. And His agent, Aaron Goodwin, has reportedly let it be known that his client, Damian Lillard, would be disgruntled if he were to end up somewhere else and might try to sit out in some situation, which would be pretty shocking to see from Damian Lillard. But it just sounds like he's trying to force his way to Miami there. And I really think Portland is just in a tough spot here because they can't give up Damian Lillard for really low value, historically low value for superstar trades. But also, if they send him somewhere else other than the Miami Heat, everyone else in the league is watching how this plays out. And this could be a domino effect where if he goes somewhere else that he doesn't want to with 4 years left on his contract, you might see stars in the future try to request those no-trade clause in their contracts like Bradley Beal did and try to force their way here. So this kind of feels like a really important moment for the NBA where the Blazers are not going to fold to Lillard's demands, but now with player empowerment nowadays, they kind of run the league. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this back and forth plays out.
Ben, I love the point that Evan made there about Aaron Goodwin, but I'll tell you right now, if I were the Portland Trailblazers and Joe Cronin, to Aaron Goodwin, I'd say, well, good luck. He can sit out and cut into some of that $50 million a year he's making. You've got to make a move that's best for your franchise.
No doubt. Well, and we're seeing that now not only happen in Portland, Evan, but you think about what's happening with the James Harden situation in Philadelphia, and I keep thinking back to where the LA Clippers are at, because in the midst of all this, like there's a potential where we could see a three-team or multiple-team trade as far as Damian Lillard goes. Same thing could happen as far as James Harden. Where do you view the Clippers to stand like within all of this? Like, are they a team that actually wants Harden right now? What's their mindset here going into all this, since they could play a focal point in a number of these deals?
So they could. I think that they're probably out on Damian Lillard. I just don't think they have the assets to make sense there as far as draft capital goes after the Paul George and Kawhi Leonard moves in the past there. But I do think they make a lot of sense for James Harden. But Philadelphia is, we know with Daryl Morey in the past, when he wants to get rid of a player, he wants peak value back in return. And we saw him sit on Ben Simmons in his contract for almost 8 months until he was traded eventually for James Harden. I don't think we're getting to that point exactly with Philadelphia with James Harden as far as that goes. But I think Los Angeles, they do have the assets to make it work. They have Terrence Mann. They have a couple picks in the future way down the road. They have expiring contracts and Marcus Morris, Robert Covington, Nicholas Batum. But according to Zach Lowe of ESPN, the Clippers are reluctant to give up Terrence Mann in any deal, which is surprising a little bit because Terrence Mann doesn't even average 25 minutes per game for the Clippers, but he's a very important role player for that team. So I think they're just trying to stronghold the Sixers here. James Harden does not want to be with the Sixers anymore. But it does sound like behind the scenes that James Harden and the Sixers might be working towards maybe a one-year trial run again, because Daryl Morey reportedly wants to keep James Harden around next year. He's going to try to convince him to stay in Philadelphia for one more year. And that could be really interesting, because if James Harden does indeed stay next year on an expiring contract, sure, the Sixers will be running it back there. But that's a flight risk to bring back James Harden into that locker room for sure and see how that plays out. So it kind of feels like both these superstar deals with Harden and Lillard are kind of in a stalemate here, where these both might drag out into August.
Evan, are we talking about James Harden because it's July 6th or 7th and there's not much else to talk about? Or is he actually a legitimate player, in your opinion, that if he goes to the Clippers with PG and Kawhi Leonard, changes the dynamic potentially of the Western Conference?
I would say James Harden is definitely not a superstar anymore, yeah, but I would say he's still an all-star level player. A player can give you around 20 points per game and 10 assists per game, which is really valuable still in today's league. And you put him next to Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, that's obviously a trio of stars there that you not really reliable as far as injuries goes. And I would not be shocked if all three of those guys got hurt at some point next season if that were to happen. But with how all in the Clippers are already on Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and how it has not gone well over the last 3 or 4 years, if you can get James Harden for cheap, just for expiring contracts, maybe a pick swap or two down the road, why not roll the dice, try to get a championship? I think James Harden on that Clippers team, they brought back Russell Westbrook as well. I think that could be a top four team in the West next year. That's certainly not any guarantee on that as far as that goes, but I think a healthy James Harden, and obviously health is the caveat with all these guys there, with PG, Kawhi Leonard, and James Harden, but if all of those guys stay healthy, I think they're a legitimate 50-plus win team next season.
It's so interesting to see that Harden now, odds on him to for where he will play next. Clippers are the favorite at minus 180. We've talked about Lillard a couple times today and throughout the week, minus 275 to go to the Heat. That is the favorite team for him. Evan, as far as the San Antonio Spurs, they've been kind of floated around as this team that could make some moves because they have a lot of assets. They've got a lot of room. They just bring in Victor Wembanyama. How aggressive do you expect them actually to be this summer when you consider you have Wembanyama, but there's still a lot of development that has to happen for a rookie coming in right away?
Yeah, and they have a really exciting young core, too, outside of Wembanyama. Devin Vassell, Keldon Johnson, a couple other names, too, that are really intriguing long-term for them. Jeremy Sohan from Baylor, who was top pick last year. But I think San Antonio, they're one of the few teams remaining, even after acquiring Reggie Bullock's $10 million salary yesterday in that three-team trade for Grant Williams, that sign-and-trade where the Mavericks got him. They still have around $15 million in cap space, and they also have a couple contracts in Zach Collins, Doug McDermott, Devontae Graham, that come up to about $30, $40 million there, and they could easily get involved, I think, in this Damian Lillard talks, not to get Lillard themselves, but to help facilitate that trade. If they want to get draft capital in return for taking on those salaries, and Tyler Hero and Yusuf Nurkic, both sides, Miami and Portland, want to get off those salaries. And we mentioned before that San Antonio, they view Victor Wembanyama more as a four immediately than a five. So having Nurkic in there as a starting center next season would take a lot of pressure off of Wembanyama. Tyler Hero in that Spurs system with Greg Popovich with Victor Wembanyama running pick and roll, that'd be a lot of fun for Hero's development too. So I would certainly keep an eye under the radar. I think San Antonio, they move in silence a lot as far as transactions go, but I would not be stunned at all if that's the realistic team to look out for to help facilitate that Damian Lillard trade.
Don't forget about my guy CeeDee Sissoko either, second round draft pick. G League, ignite them all.
Well, he didn't mention my guy Malachi Branham. Okay. That's okay. I won't hold it against him.
Okay, come on. Easy does it. Evan Sidery, outstanding NBA insider for Forbes. You can follow at eSidery. Evan, great stuff. We really appreciate the time. Thank you.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Meanwhile, as we hit a breakable, crazy scenes at Wimbledon on center court. Andy Murray takes a bad spill. A few players have slipped today behind the baseline. Murray was in a ton of pain. He gets up and with set point, puts a first serve in. Stefano Tsitsipas can't even put a ball in. Didn't even make Murray play out the point. Murray wins the set, but He looked to be in a ton of pain. He's up 2-1. Big favorite now on the live line. What a moment there at center court.
Wow. It's going to be interesting to see if he's going to continue or not. I know they're taking some sort of break. Is there rain coming that they're going to close the roof?
I think the roof's already closed.
That's what I thought.
I think the darkness is already there as well. We have one more segment before the darkness comes on this show. We'll have our best bets for the rest of the night when we come back to Sharp Money.